welcome to Magic by Design. If you're listening for the first time, welcome aboard. Thanks for taking the time to press play or download. I assume that if you've taken that step, you know why you're here, but just in case. Magic by Design is a podcast in which we are aiming to watch and review every Disney animated feature film. Each and every week, we break down a movie from the Disney canon in an attempt to discover the secrets behind the magic. We watched Disney's 25th animated feature this week, The Little Known Black Cauldron. But before dissecting this forgotten entry in the Disney cinematic legacy, allow me to introduce myself. I'm Ken, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host slash brother Garrett. Gar, how are you?
Yo.
What's up?
You hated this film. Ken, everything Ken's about to tell you is bias, because Ken went in wanting to hate this film.
I don't know. Maybe I did.
I legitimately think you went in wanting to hate this film.
I had never watched this one. I'd always avoided it because it had this reputation of killing animation at Disney.
Even though there was animated films every year after this.
Or at least as a cornerstone of the studio. So for me, maybe I was a bit biased because I had this thing of it being a film that harmed animation.
You were like, in the early stages, it doesn't even look like a Disney film. And it does.
I had a strange feeling of cognitive dissonance, Gar. I don't know about you. This is just me. I'm a human being. This I'm is an your, individual.
Your anti-Black Cauldron bias coming through. Your hatred of whales. We all know you hate whales. That's the reason you're deep-seating resentment of this film.
Who doesn't hate whales?
I've been to Wales once. It was a very nice place.
It's the only place in the British Isles I have never been, and I will never go.
What do you have against Wales?
Gar, we could do a whole podcast about that.
Sheep, mountains, Swansea, football.
I think it's a combination of the look,
the color red,
and the attempt. I'm going to carry on here.
Dragons, the letters L back to back and everything.
As I was saying.
I'm just defining Wales by its many, many key things, like the letter L back to back and everything.
Well, Doctor Who is shot there. That's a saving grace.
And Doctor Who is in this film, so you should love it. There is a Doctor. This is the first Disney animated feature that has a Doctor. Is it the only Disney animated feature that has a Doctor in it?
Possibly. It's a fake Doctor, though.
No, he's a number. He's connected.
He's there, but he's not in the official canon as such.
Yes, he is.
He's considered separate in the canon.
He regenerates into Christopher Eccleston, doesn't he?
Yes, so he is a doctor.
Like, it's officially in the canon.
But he's called the War Doctor because he wasn't a real doctor, because he abandoned the principles of the doctor.
Does that mean, what's his name, World War II British Prime Minister guy? Why can't I remember his name?
I don't know who you're talking about.
The Prime Minister of England in World War II.
Churchill,
there we go. Because he was the war prime minister, so that means he's not a real prime minister, he's not a canonical prime minister.
Yes.
Your absurd Doctor Who logic. He's not a numbered doctor! He didn't have a TV show! But he's in this movie, Ken, so you should love it. Your anti-Black Cauldron, he's not Welsh, so I can't... Actually, I don't know if he's Welsh. I assume he's not Welsh. I don't think he's Welsh.
No, he's not Welsh.
So yeah, you can't hold that against this film, I guess.
For me, it was just a combination of the look of the film. I didn't think the animation looked like a Disney film, and Disney's attempts to bury the film. I don't have any reference for it.
You're building into the narrative, Ken. You're buying into Disney want to bury this film, and you're allowing it to happen. You're giving it to the man. The corporations are holding you down.
In fairness, Garrett, it's barely associated with the Disney canon.
That's because Disney are censoring this film. That's what's happening. The Black Cauldron is being taken out of the culture, and we are here to restore it to the culture as it deserves to be, as a pretty mediocre film. But nonetheless, it deserves its spot in the pantheon of pretty mediocre films, along with other such pretty mediocre films as Dumbo and...
The Aristocats?
No, that's far worse than pretty mediocre. That's way worse than this film. Is that like that? That is a film that should be deleted from the Disney canon. The word Aristocats should just be like, you should just see it as a void. You should go to Disney Plus, you should type in Aristocats, and there should be a space for it, but it should be like grayed out and removed and unclickable.
Gar, this is not about the Aristocats.
I'm never going to let the Aristocats go.
Gar shoehorns in a burial of the Aristocats in every episode now.
And it's going to be a new one. I'll at least keep it fresh and interesting. I will bury Aristocats in different ways every week.
The thing is, Gar, I am very much a nerd for this type of thing, but it didn't land with me. It felt like Lord of the Rings light.
Yeah, I want to read this guy's book, because I want to see, did this film rip off Lord of the Rings, or did he? Because there is so many parallel Lord of the Rings. Like, the Horned King is Sauron. The Black Cauldron is the One Ring. What's his name? Weird guy name, Welsh name is Frodo. It's full Taran. There you go. One of the more easily rememberable. Elanwy. See, she's like in a doctor. That's David Tennant's catchphrase, isn't it? Elanwy.
Elanzi.
I'm making a very good Doctor Who wordplay joke, and you're shutting me down.
Well done. done for your mediocre joke, just like this mediocre film. I just don't think Disney knew how to handle this type of story. According to the author of the books, the final film had very little to do with his series, so perhaps it would have been better if it was more faithful to the source material.
I disagree that Disney had no idea what to do with this film, because I think Disney have made this film already.
You reckon?
Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah, there is parallels, and there was some calls to make it along the same lines.
Like, this is Sleeping Beauty for guys. That's as simple as that. Like, this is Sleeping Beauty geared towards...
Sleeping Broty?
Yeah, Sleeping Broty. It's geared toward young men. You're very happy about yourself.
I was very happy about that.
I didn't pat myself on the back that much for my wonderful Alonzi wordplay, but then the big smug smile on his face when he said Sleeping Broty, very pleased with himself.
It just came to me.
But yeah, it's like, it's full on, it's Sleeping Beauty aimed at young boys instead of young girls. That's what this film is.
The film was directed by Ted Berman and Richard Rich, or Richie Rich, if you will.
Is he the inspiration of the film?
Perhaps.
Richie Rich.
They had directed the previous film, The Fox and the Hound, in 1981, which we talked about last week. Go back and listen to it if you haven't done already. Not many people have, actually.
Oh, how many listens does it have?
10.
Oh, guys! What's wrong with... Actually, no, maybe they haven't made it. That's the reason. You see, they have also watched The Fox and the Hound and have not yet worked out whether or not they like The Fox and the Hound, and thus cannot listen to us to determine whether or not we like Fox and the Hound, because they don't want their opinions biased, which is quite understandable, and that's the only reason people haven't listened to that. Actually, I never plugged that episode on Twitter either, so...
Yeah, girl, you diminished our numbers.
I did diminish your numbers. My Twitter plug should have been a new episode of Magic by Design as I was talking Fox and the Hound. I don't really know.
I'm still ruminating.
I still don't really know. I'm still like, I don't know. It's okay. Good.
You can give us an update in a future episode when you decide.
When I eventually come down on one side of the Fox and the Hound.
Disney optioned the book series in 1971 and production started in 1973. So it was in production for much of the 1970s. Yeah. Well, full production.
Disney production where it's like, should we make it? How can we make it? I don't think this will work. Change it. Fix it. Move it. Let's not make it. Let's make it. Let's make some of it. Let's shove it in the shelf for a while. Let's come back to it. No, it doesn't work. Let's put it away. That's Disney's process for the sound. Yeah, and actually, it's probably a relatively healthy process where you keep on like chipping away at something until you can eventually, you think, find a way that makes it work.
Like a lump of clay.
Yes, it requires chiseling.
Yeah, so they, time. It wasn't in full production, but it was tossed around a bit for the entire decade of the 70s. With the budget of 25 to 44 million, that's 60 to 106 million in 2020, it was the most expensive animated film ever made at the time, which took over the mantle from The Fox and the Hound. The film grossed 21.3 million, 50 million domestically.
Yikes.
So it lost about half its money.
Yeah.
Because of its commercial failure, Disney did not release the film on VHS until 1998.
Ooh. So they're like, fine. If you want it, you can have it.
Critical reaction was mixed, recognizing the technical achievements, but noting it lacked the compelling characters of other Disney classics. So, really, the critical and commercial failure of this film had a big effect on animation at Disney, but we'll talk about that.
Some critics say it was confusing.
Yeah, I wouldn't say confusing, but it lacked fleshing out, I thought.
It's really not, like, it's the most, like, MacGuffin film. There is a MacGuffin, bad guy wanted, good guy wanted, chase. It's, like, the most basic adventure film structure you can possibly have. It's really not confusing.
It's not confusing in terms of the story structure, but the motivations, what the cauldron actually does... All that stuff is
Welsh
a bit,
names.
Yeah.
Clearly the Welsh names is just overwhelming. The friggin' Flawder Flam? How can you even pronounce that? Why are there so many F's?
Welsh is such a weird language.
It is a very... It's the connecting letters that are very confusing to, I think, most people's brains who don't speak Welsh. But, like, we have Irish, which is also a nonsense language, so we can't say a word.
And it has some logic, though. Welsh just seems like gobbledygook.
Yeah, well, in Irish, you at least usually pronounce most of the letters, and we don't have a necessary... Actually, we do have unnecessary letters, but still. Well, we all have our nonsense. All languages are nonsense.
English has unnecessary letters. Silent.
French is the worst for unnecessary letters. It's like, yes, just don't pronounce the last letter of every word. Why is it there? Don't worry about it.
Oh, French. This is the first Disney animated feature to contain computer-generated imagery.
Looks weird.
Moving away from the multi-plane camera hand-drawn technique. Yeah, it's not... Like, rife throughout the film, there was some bubbles, a boat, a floating orb of light, which we'll get to later, and the cauldron itself. So it's not used, like, a lot.
Because the weirdest one for me was when they were standing in the horizon looking at the castle, and, like, the clouds in the background were computer-generated.
Yeah.
But the characters in the forefront weren't.
So it had a weird green screen effect, didn't it?
Yeah, it looked very strange. And, like, this is 1985. This is the early days of computer... Like, Toy Story is still, what, 7 years away?
92? It's in its infancy. Probably in pre-production, I would say, at this stage.
But still, it's still a long way away from... So somebody cracking 3D animation in a big, meaningful way. And this is the baby steps. This is the steps that you see that get you there, aren't they?
Yeah.
You don't get to Toy Story without this.
And it's weird because the animation is pretty good before that, but when it gets to that, it gets very rough against that background. So it just looks kind of hokey.
You can clearly, the technology's just not there yet. And they're trying, and they're making it work as best they can, but the technology's not there yet. There is some cool effects. Like, the, as you mentioned, the cauldron effect is quite cool.
It's very dramatic at the end, and the orb is it's there. It's a nice, easy way to test out the technology.
It's there until it's not. Yeah. It disappears for large stretches. It's Navi from The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, Ken.
Never played it.
It just doesn't shout, hey, listen.
The film was originally slated for release in 1980, but it was delayed due to Disney animators' trouble with animating believable human characters. Something they had never really gotten right to date, perhaps with the exception of Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah, there's it seems to have gotten worse though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, when you look at Peter Pan, which has perfectly clean animated characters for the most part, and then you go, not to harp on it, the Aristocats, where there's a woman who's literally melting on the screen.
Like a candle.
Yes. You're like, how does it get worse? And these films, money is going back into these films again, you know? It's not like these films are starved of budget. As you said, Fox and the Hound, which has some human characters, and the human characters actually look mostly fine in Fox and the Hound. But yeah, it's weird that they still haven't quite cracked people.
David W. Spencer from the studio's still camera department developed a new process called the Animation Photo Transfer Process, APT, which was used for the first time in The Black Cauldron. It would enhance the technology by which the rough animation would be processed onto celluloid. First, the rough animation would be photographed onto high contrast little film, and the resulting negative would be copied onto plastic cell sheets that would transfer lines and colors, which would eventually eliminate the hand inking process. So a lot of poor women lost their jobs. That's okay.
Every
That's
time progress. You start going off the technical stuff, I kind of just zone out and start nodding. It's very, very interesting.
They still use a lot of the traditional technique because the APT process transferred line art, but would have fade off the cells over time. So they kept with the zero graphic process for a lot of the film, which they had been using since the 1950s.
It's about time they started pushing the technology forward, though, isn't it? 30 years without a major technological shift? That's kind of unheard of, I'd imagine.
Spencer did win a Technical Academy Award for this process, but computer animation would soon render it obsolete.
There you go. Good idea, but this works better.
Well, I suppose at the time it was too expensive to go all in on computer animation, which is why it's only used for set pieces.
And computers necessarily were the size of houses, so even the space you'd need for the computer animation.
Yeah, this is the first time we see the classic blue Disney home screen here.
Oh yes, the iconic Disney logo, which was not added to any of the others, but I actually quite like that they didn't add it in post.
Yeah.
That would have felt like a very Disney thing. It's like, the branding on the old films has to be consistent with the new ones, put it in there, and they don't. So yeah, this is the iconic Disney opening, which actually really hasn't changed much in the subsequent 35 years or whatever since this film was released.
It's much more sophisticated now, but it's the same thing.
The bare bones are still there. It's still the castle, the same music, and the sweeping star or whatever it is.
I think it's Tinkerbell.
Is it Tinkerbell?
It's supposed to be Tinkerbell. Well, at least in the new one it is.
Shows how much I pay attention. But yeah, it's become fancier looking, but it's still the same basic principle for the last 35 years.
We also have no credits at the start for the first time, but this was transferred to the end instead.
Which means that the 1980s is officially the point in which children didn't have the attention span to sit through credits anymore. So when Disney is like, we cannot have them sit there for 2 minutes at the beginning and see the names of the people who made this film because they are children with short attention spans in the 80s and they will get bored. So there you go. This is the 1985 is the official point at which children got short attention spans. Disney has determined it.
In the future, they'll be in TikToks. The credits will be on TikTok.
Yeah, if you want to see who made the film, you can go back and watch the TikTok with the song from this film, which will actually be a problem for this film because there is none.
Yeah, poor Nicole's out of work. We'll get onto that in a minute. The character movement looks very strange. They delayed the film, but they didn't crack it, even with the delays.
The Horned King's movement is my favourite, actually. There's a period later in the film. I think it might actually be somewhat a stylistic choice that he doesn't really walk. He more floats.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny to see him just float without any real animation.
I had a note here that the Horned King looks like Skeletor from He-Man.
He does. Even the very beginning, I'm like, is this Skeletor?
He looks like crap, to be honest. Worse than Steppenwolf from the Justice League and Madame Bonfamille from the Aristocats combined. So he looks like he's kind of melting, but also moves kind of weird.
He's not as bad as the Aristocats. Let's not throw things we can't take back here.
They've had better. If you look back to even Fantasia, the devil in that would have been a a cool looking villain, but it just looked kind of lazy to me.
There is a moment in the early parts of the film where he like appears in front of a bunch of goons with these like very impressive thunder and lightning effects.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool.
Like that was a set piece, and then they just very like
Maleficent-esque. Like he's dead Maleficent is basically what he's meant to be, because this film is Sleeping Beauty for guys. So of course the villain is a dead skeleton who has skin but doesn't have skin. I'm not sure.
I didn't think he had skin until the end.
Until when his skin gets burned off by the cauldron. So it's like apparently his flesh, even though he looked like a skeleton the entire time.
Yeah, well, maybe it's just like one of those
skeleton
like,
flesh,
like mummies. Like, you know, they have skin, but it's very dry.
And it's just green,
weird. But then sometimes he's grey, and then sometimes he's black, and another time he's like purple.
The colors change a lot in this film.
Yeah, the film is loosely based on the first two books of the Chronicles of Prydain by Lloyd Alexander. He must have Welsh heritage.
His name is Lloyd. Surely he does.
Yeah, the series has 5 novels and are based on Welsh mythology, as you noted, Gare. Ollie Johnston and Frank Thomas were convinced that the studio should produce the movie, and that if it had been done properly, it might be as good as Snow White. It's interesting to me that this is still their benchmark, despite producing better work since. Like, as we discussed in other podcasts, I would consider Bambi a much better film, and Sleeping Beauty.
Yes.
But like, and that's probably the reason they needed to go at this stage.
Pooh. They could do more poos.
Yeah.
More films like Pooh. That would be a plus. I'm on board. More films like Pooh.
This is... Gary just wants more poo in his life. The story took a long time to develop due to having to pare down the over 30 characters from the original books.
Gurgi got in, though. That's all that matters. Gurgi is like, oh, we gotta get Gurgi in there.
Gotta get Gurgi / Gollum.
He's
basically Gollum. He has the mannerisms, he has the voice, he has the selfish motivations.
But is like sycophantic when challenged and like...
Yeah, and self-flagellating as well.
Mm.
What led to the long development time? So the story was very complicated to pare down into a kind of an 80-minute film.
The most basic story they could possibly have told, basically.
Shortly before the film's initially planned 1984 theatrical release, a test screening for the rough cut of The Black Cauldron was held at the studio's private theatre in Burbank. After the film, particularly the climactic cauldron born sequence, proved to be too intense and disturbing for the majority of the children in the audience, most of whom ran away out of the theatre in terror before the film even finished. Newly appointed studio chairman Jeffrey Katzenberg, who went on to form Pixar when he got ousted from Disney eventually.
And most importantly, Ken, Quibi.
Yes, of course.
He launched Quibi. That's, of course, his legacy now. Nothing he did at Disney, nothing he did at DreamWorks. Your legacy is Quibi. This is what you've done to yourself.
Maybe they could make The Black Cauldron in 10-minute episodes or something like that. He ordered the film to be cut and re-edited to make it shorter and more kid-friendly. The producers resisted, resulting in Katzenberg taking the film into an editing booth himself and attempting to edit it down. The producers went and told on him to Michael Eisner, who stopped him from editing the film, but he still insisted that it be modified and delayed its scheduled release of Christmas 1984 to July 1985 so that it could be reworked.
This film has been sabotaged by Disney at all turns, Ken. It took the artistic intent had been compromised. It's meant to terrify these children and scare them like... I don't want to curse, so you won't have to add in a huh. Scare them sockless. There you go. You don't have to edit sockless out.
So you're saying it's so scary their socks come off? It's and
like
shoes?
Yes, it's like the cartoon exaggeration where they're so scared that they jump so high that they leave their socks and shoes behind. There you go. Scared sockless.
Very good, Karen. Very PG.
That's an expression that I will coin and insist is a real expression. That's what this film should do. And they cut it to bits, Ken. They slashed out the integrity of the film. And what's left is something they stuck in the vault and wanted nobody to see ever again.
To your point, Gar, the film was ultimately cut by 12 minutes, with existing scenes rewritten and reanimated for continuity. Many of the cutscenes involved extended character interactions, but other trims involved more violent content, such as the undead cauldron born sequence.
They really do nothing, don't they? It's like, yeah. We're alive! Oh, no.
We're dead.
No, we're dead again. Like, literally immediately, they do nothing.
That's what confused me, because like I thought the Horned King was inside it, but at the start of the film, but apparently, I think as you said, it's the source of his power, so like...
It's the same as Lord of the Rings, it's the one ring to rule them all, so if he has the cauldron, he has all the power that he has in the world, but if he doesn't, he's just like a big...
Shriveling skeleton, so it's going to replenish his powers and his army. The undead army would rise with the cauldron. The ending kind of confused me in that everything was going right, and then all of a sudden, the cauldron which is his or
Gurgi. They established this very clearly, Ken, that if someone willingly goes into the cauldron, the powers of the cauldron are reversed, so everything that came out is sucked back in. That's the reason everything was being sucked back in, and then he got kicked into it and got burned alive being sucked back into the cauldron, because we all know the cauldron kills everybody except Gurgi.
That's a bit of a weird sequence, because
it's a very anticlimactic ending, because he doesn't even, like, it's not even like a this is Sparta kick, because he's just trying to attack Taran, and Taran just kind of kicks him off him, and he's like, no, and slowly falls into the cauldron.
There's like at least 30 seconds where he stabilizes and looks like he's rebuffed the attack,
but and yeah, they seem to cut to and that's probably where scenes were cut, and it probably makes a little less sense.
Apparently there's a skip in the soundtrack as well, because they literally cut that sequence without fixing it. I didn't notice that though.
But yeah, you can see, because they cut to the other two run back into the room, and all of a sudden he just gets sucked back into the cauldron, and it's like, it does feel like there's like a scene missing there after he's kicked away and before he falls into the cauldron, that they're just like, apparently this is just too terrifying for children, we cannot put it in there. So
like, yeah, good enough.
It's good enough. It's not much better than that, but it is good enough. It just about works.
But as we said, among the most effective things in the film was that cauldron sequence, because it looked really cool with the 3D effects.
And he got burned alive. That was gruesome.
Yeah, he got all the flesh stripped from his bones. What was left of his flesh anyway.
I was very disappointed that there was no neck snap in this film, despite me thinking there was a neck snap, because the Horn King at one stage grabs the minion by the neck, and they make like the neck snap sound as like the crunch. And it's like, oh, he's just neck snapped his minion. This is badass. What a great Disney film. But nah.
You thought Disney was going to actually kill off a character. Speaking of, Gurgi gets wished back to life in the end, completely undoing the emotional stakes. I would have respected if they left Gurgi dead.
And especially, who doesn't want Gurgi dead? Really? Gurgi's just annoying.
He's like, God damn it, Gurgi, get out of here. I found Taran as a protagonist annoying as well.
He's every, like, snot-nosed, annoying hero's journey guy.
Bit entitled.
I feel like Disney doesn't really know how to write young men without them just feeling obnoxious.
Being like, oh gosh, I think I'm the best. And then a girl tells me I'm not the best. And I'm like, what are you talking about, girl? But then I learned to like girls.
Yeah, because if you look at Peter Pan is probably more obnoxious than Taran is, but they're cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, there seems to be a very much a Disney archetype for male and female characters.
Mm. So people are like, Disney's female characters are all terrible, which there is problems with Disney's female characters and the way they are presented in many of these films, but they have a male character problem too. Disney are just bad at characters, I think, is what we're learning.
Gar, we get a classic magic sword trope in this film as well.
Yeah, like Taran is useless. Like, literally entirely useless. Even he gets his magic sword and then immediately loses it when people come to try and kill him.
But he doesn't even wield it. It wields him.
Yes. He literally just to be held in his hand and it will drag him around and save him.
A cool song comes on every time he uses it as well.
And it makes like lightsaber sound effects like a video game. It's like...
It's great. Cool. Podcast audio, Gar.
Yeah, this is my lightsaber. My knockoff lightsaber noises. That's what that is.
So you don't get sued.
Yeah. I wonder, just to cut you off as you try to move on, I'm trying, like, there is probably some Star Wars influence in here, isn't there? Like, the sword is a lightsaber, Gurgi is like an Ewok. I'm not sure it was Return of the Jedi out.
It would have been
the full trilogy, actually, might have been out at that stage.
It would have been in the same time frame, so yeah. I mean, you know, if that's what works with kids and audiences, you're gonna even unconsciously borrow from it.
And Taran is not very Luke Skywalker, but there's a bit of Luke Skywalker in there.
Yeah, the same journey as such. So the person who is the unlikely hero who achieves his destiny.
So this is basically Star Wars crossed with Lord of the Rings and a little bit of He-Man. It's basically, what do boys like? Jumble, 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 jumble.
Throw all that stuff in there. But at its heart, it's a classic quest where a troop collects a band of crazy characters along the way. When they did that stuff, that's when I found myself enjoying this film most.
You were just there burying Gurgi, and now you're like, when they got Gurgi together.
Well, we don't like Gurgi, but like they had the fairy and the minstrel and some of the interplay and dialogue between those characters was fun.
Yeah.
But other than that,
I think this film is perfectly fine. I don't think it's great. I don't think it's like, it's not Aristocats bad. It's not one of the best films. It's not like so bad we never speak of it again. It's like a perfectly middle of the road adventure film that like can't possibly offend anybody, but can't really inspire anybody either. And I really do wonder what about this film is just, fair enough, the box office flop probably is the thing that made me go, oh, put it away, never mention it again. But like on a critical level, it's really fine, though you hated it from
the beginning. The weird thing is like, I just found it so strange watching it because, as you said, Disney never talk about it. They don't promote it.
It used to be in theme parks and they took it out.
Yeah. And
it's not in Kingdom Hearts.
when I saw these characters, I have no reference for them, because even if you haven't seen these films, you've seen the characters. Mm. They just permeate the culture somehow. But in this, like the witches, the fairies, I'd never seen any of this before, so it was just so strange to have a Disney film that I had no reference for.
Kind of cool though, isn't it?
It was a kind of like discovering, like
it's a secret Disney film.
Yeah, the analogy I was going to use is like an archaeologist, like, oh, a unique find in the Disney canon that no one's ever seen before. Literally no one's ever seen before, because nobody watches it.
And nobody talks about it.
Disney talked about rebooting it in 2016, but it still hasn't surfaced. I imagine that they'll make it live action and they might be a bit more faithful to the source material, like psychic pigs and...
Psychic pigs rule, though!
You don't want to take
psychic pigs out. The psychic pig was the best. Also, one of my most important notes, it's really nothing to do with this film other than the fact there's a pig in this film, and it reminded me, Waddles.
Yes. One of the great Disney pigs.
Yes, if Henwin walked so Waddles could run.
That's fair. Garrett, there's not much about the music of this film other than parts of the score are very similar to Ghostbusters. The person who did the score just did Ghostbusters before this. So
Adventure makes me feel good.
The other bit where it goes... That's a
I've never seen Ghostbusters.
Gara's one of the weird people that's never seen Ghostbusters, but it does have a very Ghostbuster-y feel in terms of the score.
Like, Ghostbusters is one of those films where I'm aware of literally all of its cultural references. Like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, the Don't Cross the Streams, all that stuff. And I watched a bunch of the Ghostbusters animated cartoon and had the toys from the Ghostbusters animated cartoon as well, but I've never actually seen Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, or the Ghostbusters reboot.
Gara, one of my Halloween traditions is that I watch Ghostbusters 1 and 2 back to back. Mm-hmm. We're going to do it.
I'm not watching it.
Gary, you've got to watch Ghostbusters.
Can't force me to watch Ghostbusters. Yeah, there's no music in this film.
Yeah, it's confusing for me because, like, again, there's that cognitive dissonance, because there was moments in the film that you're like, here comes the song. And I knew there wasn't any songs, but here's the moment where they would put in a song and it just wasn't there. The epic score, that like they've started introducing these orchestrated scores, really overtakes the visuals for me. There's nothing on screen that matches the grandeur of the orchestra, except maybe the film's climax.
But to be fair, this is the kind of film to which an orchestral score should like thoroughly be like thriving for. As opposed to Fox and the Hound, which is a relatively like low stakes character story, this is like full bombastic adventure. This is where like, oh, you get the orchestra to go wild, but they don't have many scenes for the orchestra to go wild in, so there you go.
As we know, to get one last musical reference here, the first Disney film to have a closing credit sequence, so it did have the nice title cards at the end in the rolling credits, which we saw for the first time, and it had elements of the score as well and other songs. But the Disney closing credit sequence would become iconic because they do usually put some effort into the visuals, and there's a nice version of the soundtrack, but they haven't done that yet. So
it's usually the classic famous singer sings a version of one of the songs that we mentioned last week. They're actually the animation of the credits, which you didn't actually watch because we're horrible millennials that don't watch credits. We kind of skim through them, but the animation of the credits actually quite nice.
It looked nicer than the film in
it
some places.
It was like still animation of the characters and stuff, and like the character, like I think the characters in the film are pretty well designed. I think Taran is your like pretty classic Disney like protagonist, and Elonzi is your kind of stock Disney princess. You know, they have the like traditional Disney character design, so if you do character art of those characters, they're going to look pretty good. Oh, we've got to mention, Ken, animation inconsistency, Ken, toward the end of the film.
Of course.
When they're escaping the castle, Taran goes and he pulls the chain off the gate and he opens the gate, and then they cut to the next shot, we're in the boat and the gate is closed again. Then the next shot after that, they escape through the gate. This kind of animation inconsistency is inconceivable and not tolerate on this podcast, Ken. How does that happen?
Yeah, because I'm assuming there's a continuity person on these films that watches it through, and even the animators when they're looking at their stuff, and they do dailies, what they call dailies, where they watch the rough footage and they approve stuff or they tweak stuff. So how does this stuff get through? It's almost as unforgivable as Miss Bianca in The Rescuers wearing a coat and then suddenly not wearing a coat.
Like, I really do wonder, like, the number of people that probably had to watch this film before this film was released is like... It's at least like 10 to 20, I would imagine. At least. And somehow, none of them spot it. Or maybe they did spot it, and it's like, it's too late. Let's just print it. It would take far more effort than it's worth to fix, so let's just put it out there.
Yeah, it's good enough. Kids won't notice.
Yeah.
Just nerds like us. In terms of the legacy of this film, Garrett, it was the birth of computer animated graphics being used in animation. During this time, however, they were modeled in computers, but styled using a process called cel shading to look more like traditional animation. Another element that took Disney to new heights during the Renaissance period.
And you still see cel-shaded animation to this very day.
You do. I prefer it.
I think cel-shaded animation is, like, there's a big thing about video games, because, like, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, one of the best video games of all time, is cel-shaded. So is Wind Waker, which, again, one of the best games of all time.
I think it's a happy medium, because in fairness, I love Toy Story, and I do accept that this is the norm now in animation 3D, but something about the cel-shaded animation living between 2D and 3D just really appeals to me.
I think it generally, probably not in the case of this film, but generally, I think it ages better.
True.
Like if you look at a lot of the example of video games, if you look at a lot of 3D video games, especially early 3D video games, a lot of PS1, PS2 games, they look dreadful, you know, by 2020 standards.
No, they've aged. The polygon shapes and
horrifically. It's all like weird blobs and triangles, and it's all very strange. Whereas if you go back and look at like Super Nintendo games with their sprite based art, much better. But then you look at like some of the 3D games that used cel shaded art, like say The Wind Waker, which was released in like 2002, I think, give or take. Aged much better. It looks much nicer.
And we're looking at upcoming films here, Gar, like Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, The Lion King, and they hold up to this day. One of the reasons is because it looks as slick and bright and vibrant as anything you could produce today. So that's one of the major legacies of this film. It was also the first Disney animated feature film to feature Dolby stereo sound, another step forward.
Yes, very good, I noticed.
The first Disney film to receive a PG rating.
Oh, it's because of all the violence. It's the next snap and the disintegration of a character. Like the Horned King really does disintegrate in a very gruesome manner. It's like, oh, all the skin falls off his bones, and then his bones fall to dust as he's sucked into the cauldron. It's like, all right.
There's also some major cleavage in this movie.
Oh yeah, there's a scene where one of the witches gets a frog stuck in her boobs and fondles. The frog is a man turned into a frog as well, who fondles her boobs. It's like, ooh, Disney.
She just got massive boobs.
Very risque.
Yeah. The film's poor box office performance resulted in a massive loss for the Walt Disney Studios and put the feature animation department in jeopardy, earning it the nickname the film that almost killed Disney. So the upcoming films were actually not produced on the studio lot. Like the studio lot, if you look at the pictures of it or the videos, the main building has the Seven Dwarfs on it, all the signage has all the animated characters on it, but they moved all that off the lot into prefabs down the road.
Poor Black Cauldron. It's like, this film is so terrible, we have to kick you out of the building.
You can still make your toonies, but we're all in on the live action now.
Yeah, great mouse detective. Go make it down the road.
My final thoughts on this film, Gar, like you last week, I'm unsure how to feel about this one. I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. I'm just kind of indifferent to it.
Yeah, I think this is a perfectly solid, like, 5.5 out of 10 film. It's, like, again, it's not so bad that you shove it away, never to be seen again, but it's, like, I don't think anybody could particularly be like, oh, Black Cauldron, that's one of my faves. Maybe there are. Not that many, though. Mostly because no one saw it.
True. As I said, I enjoyed some of the wit that emerged from the trials and tribulations of the ragtag band of adventurers and its landmark achievement for visual effects in animated films, especially the film's climax where the cauldron takes center stage, but ultimately it left me cold. Overall, I feel like this film is forgettable. I can see why Disney have never really been keen to promote it and fans tend to forget it exists, resulting in it being lost to the doldrums of Disney animated history.
Unfairly so, by the way.
You think so?
Listen, if we're going to remember Aristocats, we got to remember this.
That's fair. As I said, I love fantasy films, but this just isn't a good example of the genre. Even at the time, there were films that did it better, such as The Neverending Story, Dark Crystal, The Princess Bride. I know they were live-action films, but there are successful examples around the 80s that did this better. I think if they had maybe invested more in the source material and understood what appeals to people about these films, it could have been better.
What would you have changed?
I don't know. I just, again, as you said, the stakes just felt low and the characters just weren't compelling or appealing. You weren't really rooting for them either way.
Poor Taron. He's doing his best. I actually quite like that Taron realizes by the end of the film that I'm a fraud. That's his takeaway from the film. That's like, I'm not a hero. I'm a pig. I'm Pig Boy, as he's called multiple times in the film, to my delight. He's like, I am Pig Boy. This is my lot in life. And I'm okay with that. Just bring Gurgi back to life. And then he probably regrets that because Gurgi's very annoying.
Instantly just
comes back. Kill him again. Can I have my sword back? I'll do it myself.
I'll keep the sword. All right, Gurgis, we've come to the end of the show for another week. Sadly, as we said, there are no songs in the Black Cauldron, but fear not. Our resident musical maiden Nicole is still going to grace us with her presence this week, so be sure to stick around for her usual segment minus the performance after the outro. You can find brand new episodes of Magic by Design every Monday, where all magical podcasts are downloaded. Check out our website at magicbydesign.buzzsprout.com to find a full list of podcast providers. There, you'll also find all our previous episodes if you're catching up or feel like revisiting revisiting an old favourite. Seriously, there's some episodes recently that were very good and haven't got any listens, so, you know,
because all of our episodes are very good, Ken. We've never produced we're not like Disney. We don't have duds.
We have podcast after podcast of gold. We've never had an Aristocats in our canon.
Yeah, Disney is going to produce a retrospective of our podcast. That's how good this podcast is. It's like, oh god, this is better than any of the films we made. We got to produce a retrospective of the magic of Magic by Design. There you go. It's like, that's the name of the series. Okay, Disney Plus special.
When they make a film about us, who do you want to voice you and which animal do you want to be?
Justin Bieber and Fox.
Good call. I would like to have Brian Cox and an eagle.
There you go.
I don't know. That's just
the Fox and the Eagle.
That's the first thing that came to
my
head.
Very exciting film.
Magic by Design is also on all your favorite social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/magicbydesignpod, on Twitter at magicdesignpod, and on the Insta at magicbydesignpod. We have some cool stuff up there, some interesting stuff from animated history. And this week, in fact, just last week, we had some of the prints from the original book of The Fox and the Hound, so
fancy.
If you're interested in that stuff, check it out. If you liked what you heard, please do consider giving us a review on your podcast platform of choice. Share the podcast on your socials or recommend the show to a fellow Disney fan. If you don't, there's nothing we can do about it, but, you know,
we will hold a deep grudge and then bury that grudge in the Black Cauldron until some weird witches
bury them in the Black Cauldron. Yeah, that's it. We're going to unleash the Black Cauldron and suck you into it, and your bones will be stripped of their flesh. We will be back next week at the same time, same place, with Disney's 26th animated feature, The Great Mouse Detective. But until then, stay safe and remember, the more we find to love, the more we add to the measure of our hearts. That's not from The Black Cauldron, but it is from the books. Now then, Nicole is here to regale us with some fun facts about the music of The Black Cauldron, and I am happy to report that her next film does indeed have songs, so normal service will be resumed next week.
Is this the only one that doesn't have songs?
Not the only one, but it's one of the few that don't. I think Fantasia technically doesn't have songs, but we found one that had words.
There you go. That was Ave Maria, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So technically we found Ave Maria in the film with our fine-tooth comb.
We're such good podcasters and researchers. Thanks for listening, and over to you, Nicole.
Hello there, Disney lovers. It's me, your musical correspondent, Nicole, coming to you live from my bedroom. This week, let us stir the Black Cauldron. My dearest Disney listeners, I am afraid that this is one of the only Disney movies to contain no songs. The shock. The horror. It really is Halloween time. However, the film score was composed by the rather successful and award-winning composer Elmer Bernstein, who also wrote music for The Magnificent Seven, To Kill a Mockingbird, The Great Escape, and later on, Wild Wild West, among many others. Bernstein is known as the composer who developed some of the most recognizable and memorable music themes in Hollywood history. He also won an Oscar for his score to the film version of the musical Thoroughly Modern Millie, one of my faves, and wrote the score for the Thriller music video with Michael Jackson. At the time of developing the music for The Black Cauldron, Bernstein was reveling in the success of his music for the 1984 Ghostbusters movie. Just like Ghostbusters, Bernstein made use of the eerie instrument, the Ondemarno. It was a French electronic musical instrument developed in the late 1920s, played by a keyboard. It sounds like a cello played by an alien through a strange radio frequency. I'm coining that one. Popular bands like Radiohead and Daft Punk have used it in their tracks as well. There was a lot of revisions to the film, and so Bernstein's composition was cut or unused. However, music critics were positive and felt that Bernstein's bleak and ominous arrangements played a significant part in depicting the fantasy world of the film. That's all for now, folks. My pipes are taking a rest, but tune in next week for more musical treats.
Do you want us to come up with a Black Cauldron song?
I thought Nicole might do that, but she didn't.
She didn't? No. All right, we're going to come up with a Black Cauldron song. So it's like, la la la, la la la, Black Cauldron. La la la, la la la, Black Cauldron. Taran goes on an adventure. He's really quite useless. He tries to use a sword, but the sword really uses him. Everybody's name is unpronounceable. Everything is based in Welshmith. Everything that happens, it has no stakes. Gurry's annoying, comes back to life. Black Cauldron, Black Cauldron. Oh, it's the Black Cauldron. Full of Disney tropes. Falls in love in one day. Annoying protagonist. Mediocre villain. Comes to a conclusion that's not really inspiring. Black Cauldron. Black Cauldron. Black Cauldron.